Kena versus Department of Corrections.
Morning, Your Honors. Christopher Taylor on behalf of Mr. Kanha. So there's two issues in this case.
Would you like to reserve any time?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm sorry about that. I would like to reserve 3 minutes. So the Public Records Act affords inmates in general the same rights under the statute as every other type of requester. There are very specific exceptions to that concerning penalty assessments and injunctive relief on the part of agencies, but those are not at issue in this case. However, the specific facts for an inmate are very different. An inmate cannot inspect, must pay for the copies. An inmate is subject to the mailroom policies of the Department of Corrections, and that's really what's at issue in this case. Under Livingston v. Sedano, the rejection by a mailroom policy does not constitute a denial under the Public Records Act because it's done for different purposes. Pursuant to a different statute, it allows the Department of Corrections to identify public records as contraband under certain circumstances. But as a practical effect, it means that Mr. Kanha was not able to look at the records that were provided by the Department of Corrections in this case in response to his first initial public records request.
So is that the basis for the lawsuit, is as to the 455 production, was the mailroom policy?
It's not in the sense that the mailroom policy, I don't think, impacts the Public Records Act. I'm not asking the court to reconsider Livingston v. Sedano. I'm not suggesting that that should count as a denial under the Public Records Act. The basis for the lawsuit is that when you actually get to look at the records, it is clear that the records produced by the department are incomplete. There was silent withholding going on here. There were additional responsive records the department possessed that did not get disclosed or produced by the department.
As to the first production, the 455 production, your argument focuses on the discovery rule.
Yes, sir.
But even under the discovery rule, I mean, there's two concerns. One is, when the internal appeal was filed and the department decided that, they recited, we don't have the internal appeal, but they recited in response to that. You've said our production was not responsive, and here's why we disagree with you about that. So doesn't that support, isn't the other side's argument, well, if you knew enough to file the appeal, raising the responsiveness in April of the year before you filed the lawsuit, why doesn't the one-year statute, any discovery rule would have been triggered?
I disagree with that, Your Honor, because I don't think the appeal was straightforwardly an issue about silent withholding. It was an issue about the mailbox rule. It was an issue about him not having received the records, any records at that point. And so the fact that he was able to identify in his own head that he hadn't received anything and that in his head was a basis for an appeal, internal appeal with the Department of Corrections, does not mean that he had information that would lead him to believe that he had a Public Records Act lawsuit at that point.
Under the discovery rule, doesn't the party claiming the discovery rule have the burden of coming forward with evidence showing when they actually knew the facts that established the cause of action?
I think that, yes, Your Honor, except I think the standard is not when they actually knew, it's when they, with reasonable diligence, should have known.
They actually knew, you wouldn't need the second part, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So at some point he actually knew in this litigation, he or his attorney actually knew it was an incomplete production.
That's correct. At some point he did know that, and the record is not complete as to exactly when that occurred.
I guess, yeah, that's obviously where I'm going. Can we say that he's met his burden under the discovery rule on a summary judgment?
I think, Your Honor, the fact that he indicated in his April 21st, 2013 initial request that he had still not received the records under the PDU 24889, that means that as of April 2013, he still had not received the records and therefore would not have had sufficient information in terms of actual knowledge to allow him to understand that he had a cause of action under the PRA. So I think that's what there is in the record that allows us to come to that conclusion. And as far as should have known, I think the fact that he did file that subsequent Public Records Act request and was, through some back and forth communication, asked about sending the records to a third party so that he was actually able to, in some fashion, receive the records or at least find out what the content of them was.
But he backed away from that. He did not have it delivered to a third party.
He did back away from that, but I think that would be a legitimate triggering date for when he should have known. And certainly had he not backed away from that, he would have known. He would have actually had actual knowledge at that point. So
time is fleeting. Do you want to get to the other, the 889 production?
Yes, Your Honor. As to the 889 issue, the request itself, I think, is poorly phrased and is ambiguous as to what it means. However, I think the only two plausible readings of his request are that either Mr. Conha was asking for those records that were responsive to the 22455 request, as well as an unrelated additional request, or that he was asking for what was actually mailed to him in response to the 455 request.
And the department took the first
meeting
and sent their letter, and he didn't respond saying, no, you got it wrong.
The department actually took a hybrid approach, didn't use either of those plausible interpretations of his request, and instead sent those records that were responsive to the initial request, but re-redacted them, put new Bates stamps on them, and omitted all of the accompanying documents that were produced in response to the 455 request, the cover letter, the appeal form, the redaction log. There was a number of pieces of paper that were not responsive records to 455 that were nevertheless actually mailed to Mr. Conha at that point. And those records, after they've been mailed, are now public records. They're now responsive to that subsequent request, if that's the proper interpretation of that. And so either way, I don't think the department met its burden under the summary judgment standard. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I am Assistant Attorney General Tim Fulner, and I represent the Department of Corrections in this appeal. The trial court correctly granted the department's motion for summary judgment because Mr. Conha's claims related to his October 2012 public records request were barred by the Public Records Act one-year statute of limitations. And with respect to Mr. Conha's second public records request from April 2013, the trial court correctly concluded that the department complied with the act when it sent Mr. Conha the responsive documents that it had previously mailed to Mr. Conha based on the language in his request. In terms of the...
Isn't our review de novo, though?
That is correct, Your Honor. The review is de novo on appeal. But the trial court got it right on in terms of a de novo review. In applying the one-year statute of limitations, even under a discovery rule, Mr. Conha has failed to show that by invoking a discovery rule, his claims were timely. He failed to provide any evidence to support a discovery rule. This lawsuit was filed on April 15, 2014. He must have shown some evidence that he did not know as of April 15, 2013, that he had sufficient factual basis for his claims. However, he used the department's internal appeals process to contest the department's response to his public records request.
And we only know in kind of a backhanded way exactly what that appeal was about.
That is correct, Your Honor. The only piece of the appeal is the department's response at this point. However, the department's response does characterize Mr. Conha's appeal in that it reiterates what it was asking, and it says, you indicate that you were not provided with the documents that you believe you were seeking. You were provided with incomplete didn't adequately respond to your requests, I believe what the language said. And Mr. Conha, as the party invoking the discovery rule, had the burden to come forward with sufficient information to say, no, that's not actually what my appeal said. He could have provided the appeal in the record below if that supported his argument. It was something that was produced in discovery. And so the department, by presenting evidence that he had sufficient information to use the internal process, at that point he had some notice that he believed the department's response was insufficient. Mr. Khanna had to come forward with some information at the summary judgment stage to support the fact that he did not have that information as of April 12, 2013.
Well, how about his argument today that, well, if you look at his April 21, 2013 request, this which was later labeled the 889 request, he says right in there, I didn't get this stuff. I haven't received, doesn't that imply I haven't received these documents? So that would be within a year of the April 15th lawsuit being filed. So is that evidence he did not have the documents? He did not have a basis to know what the documents were incomplete within 1 year?
It is evidence, Your Honor, but it's not evidence that he didn't have sufficient information, because it's important that he says he didn't receive copies of the documents. However, both in terms of the department's Public Records Act process and its mail process, he had the option to send those documents to a third party. And at some point, he had sufficient information to believe the documents he was provided were not sufficient to respond to his Public Records Act request, because he filed an appeal saying as much based on the department's response to his appeal. And in fact, Mr. Kavanaugh has raised these issues about Livingston, but it's important to note that the department's response in their cost letter to Mr. Kavanaugh in both the first request and the second request say, if we send these into the prison facility, they're going to be subject to the mail restrictions, and they could be restricted. But we are willing to send them to a third party on the outside, and that's how you could learn the information in those records. And the department believes that based on the internal appeal to his Public Records Act request, Mr. Kavanaugh had somehow received sufficient information to contest the department's response. And at the summary judgment stage, Mr. Kavanaugh was to present sufficient evidence to show that he deserved the invocation of a discovery rule, that he did not know and should not have known that the department's response was incomplete, as he alleges in this lawsuit. Turning to the second request, Mr. Kavanaugh sent the Department of Corrections a letter indicating that he wanted the records that had already been sent to them, and he simply wanted to pay for them again and have them sent to a third party. The department presented evidence at the summary judgment stage that the public disclosure specialist interpreted the request as seeking the responsive documents that had previously been mailed to Mr. Kavanaugh. And that's exactly what she gave him. She gathered those documents. She sent him a cost letter in her 5-day acknowledgement letter saying, here are the 11 pages of documents that have been gathered in response to your request. And they mailed them to Mr. Kavanaugh. And in doing so, they completed their obligations under the Public Records Act.
How about the argument that it was a hybrid approach when the department kind of didn't give him exactly the packet of documents previously sent, but they gave him the records and then a reconfigured joint exemption log and a brand new notice of appeal form? He didn't really get exactly the documents that were sent out the first time. That's not in play.
No, Your Honor. He got all the responsive documents that had previously been mailed to him. He didn't get a copy of the exact same cover letter and the exact same exemption log, because the department went back and did a new cover letter. He was asking for responsive documents from two requests, so they didn't charge him 10 cents a page or 20 cents a page for the actual cover letters that had been sent previously. They gathered the responsive documents that had been provided previously and mailed them to him. And at no point after the department responded, he'd come back and say, actually, you know, I wanted copies of the cover letters and the prior exemption log. There's no information in those prior cover letters or the other exemption log that was not on the new exemption log or cover letter. It just was compiling information from two different requests and charging him based on the fact that there were 11 pages as opposed to the two cover letters were 9 pages and 2 pages. So they did actually mail him the responsive documents that they had previously mailed him. They did not take a hybrid approach. In terms of turning to whether a discovery rule is appropriate under the Public Records Act, even if Mr. Kavanaugh had presented sufficient evidence to invoke a discovery rule, the department argues that it is not, because the statutory language appropriately strikes the balance between cutting off penalties to public agencies and encouraging requesters to come forward with their claims in a timely manner. The legislature provided two triggering events for when the statute of limitations accrues, and that's the last claim of or that's last production and a claim of exemption. And it did not provide language to support a discovery rule in the Public Records Act 1-year statute of limitations. Additionally, there are policy reasons that a discovery rule would not be appropriate in the Public Records Act. In terms of the penalty that is provided under the Public Records Act is not to compensate the requester for any injury or anything like that. It's to deter agencies. And the legislature appropriately evaluated the need to deter agencies through a penalty and the need to ensure that requesters don't sit back and wait to bring their claims to court. And it did so by using a 1-year statute of limitations that is triggered by two discrete events. And that statute of limitations gives fair notice to requesters and the agency about when claims need to be brought. Mr. Conha's claims needed to be brought by 1 year after the February 12, 2013 production because the department claimed an exemption. And because it claimed an exemption, Mr. Conha was on notice that he needed to bring those claims to the court in that time. And because the Public Records Act provides clear indication to requesters and agencies when their claims need to be brought to court, this court should not read a discovery rule into the statute of limitations.
If you did have a circumstance that suggests an inequity, it might be when someone has never been able to receive the actual response from the department because of a completely separate standard. Doesn't it seem kind of awkward to say, well, the last production occurred because we mailed it to you, even though we know our own agency didn't deliver it to you for other reasons? Then that suggests maybe there's room for a discovery rule in that setting?
No, Your Honor, and again, part of that is because Mr. Conha had the ability, if he wanted to ensure that he received those documents, to send them to a third party, and he also had the ability, if once they were restricted the mailroom, to send them to a third party to see what was in the documents, although he may not have been able to physically possess them based on the mailroom policy. In Livingston, the court said that the mailroom is not a Public Records Act exemption, and so it does not, it's basically a separate process. So the fact that Mr. Conha did have the ability to get those documents, and he was aware, based on the department's previous letter to him, that there was a risk that such documents would be stopped at the mailroom, the equities do not favor Mr. Conha. And for those reasons, the department would ask that the court affirm the dismissal of Mr. Conha's claims. Thank you.
I would agree that the PRA does not have a built-in statutory discovery rule. However, the courts have recognized common law discovery rules where appropriate to avoid a grave injustice being exacted due to a unduly restrictive statute of limitations. And I do think that where a requester does not actually receive and could not actually have received the responsive records, and the cause of action doesn't exist or wouldn't be known without having received those records, a discovery rule is absolutely appropriate.
About the argument that the warning tipped him off. He should have known he could have sent him to a third party.
He should have known that there was a possibility that the Department of Corrections would determine that these public records, for some reason, would be deemed to be contraband. But he would not have known that until after he actually gets the mail rejection notice, that in this particular instance, these have been deemed to be contraband. And there was an indication, yes, he could send them to a third party, but how long of a process would that have to take? How long before he realizes that what it is that is going on is they're not actually going to give him the records. And I think that Mr. Conha, in particular, used the appeal process, arguably, to determine whether the mailbox rule had been properly applied, meant that maybe he was of the belief that he would actually be able to receive the records personally, that this would not be considered contraband ultimately once it was reviewed. And so not taking advantage immediately of the opportunity to have the records sent to a third party should not be held against him.
You're arguing that the challenge to the mailroom determination should have told the discovery statute?
Yes, Your Honor. That is what I'm arguing. And until he gets a final determination that he's not going to be able to receive the records personally, he shouldn't be expected to have them sent to a third party so that he can find out what those records are. There was an argument being made that with respect to the 889 request that Mr. Kanha did not clarify or object at some point, didn't appeal. I think the response to his first appeal suggests that maybe that's not particularly appropriate. There's no indication that the department itself sought to clarify what his request was. And I do think there's ample evidence in the record that the stated interpretation of Mr. Kanha's request is both inconsistent with the language in the request and inconsistent with the department's actions in terms of looking for additional records or verifying that no additional records existed and preparing a new redaction log. Thank you.
Thank you.